Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening. Thank you one and all for being here and sharing some time with me and my guest, Robbie Holtz, who's been on before, talking about her experience and her husband's experience before that in the Australian outback with Aboriginal healers. And we're going to have some fun because we're talking real walkabout. So we will be talking with Robbie in a minute, but first tonight's metaphysical music. And it's interesting the things that will set, as my dad would say, the wheels in motion in your head. He used to say he could look at me and watch the wheels turn. Somebody said something which they swore was a joke, but didn't feel like it, and said something about me being a hoarder. And I'll tell you why there's a part of me that could be seen that way. But hoarding, the dark side of hoarding for people who don't have a lot of money is the people who wind up sitting in a pile of junk that they can't let go of because it symbolizes all their emotional stuff that they can't let go of. So people sitting in rooms full of newspapers and that kind of stuff. And then there are people that have collections. We all know them. They collect stuff. And that means you can be a hoarder and call it a hobby. And then there are rich people that are hoarders. That's called greed. And that's a form of fear. And they just have to suck the life force and money and stuff out of the world and away from everybody else so they can have it and they can feel special and powerful. And we're watching the consequences of that. But there's a whole other process of saving objects that's very, very sacred. So people do it with books. A book has not only the little symbols in black and white, which are words, but those words are symbols for thoughts. And the people who have held the book and read it have their own thoughts about it and their own emotions, and those are encoded into the paper of the book. So books are, in a way, a very sacred object, especially very old books. And that's why people who are sensitive to that love libraries and love old bookstores and have to have books around them. And I have books that I haven't read, but I know that they hold the energy of something I want to know about. And so even if that doesn't become the source of how I learn that, it's important that it be there reminding me that I want to learn it. And people do that kind of thing all the time. People have a wall of family photographs, which is just, you know, memorabilia of fun times or whatever it is. But if you have a photograph of somebody who has died with memorabilia and you light candles at it, that's not just memorabilia anymore. It's a shrine. It's exactly what's done in many religions. And whether you see it as praying to your ancestor and asking for their support, or you see it as giving love to your ancestor, it's still a shrine. So we do things and we don't realize the spiritual and metaphysical importance of them and the energy that they hold. So lo, those many years ago when I was but a young person, my bachelor's degree and master's degree are in education. And my specialty was industrial arts. So I have a master's degree in shop, which a lot of people laugh at. But what you learn to do and what you teach people to do is take an idea in your mind and using your hands and tools and materials, creating that idea in the physical world. It's another way of learning. It's another way of playing, but it's a way of creating something that wasn't there before except as a thought. And what an incredible gift it was to me to go to graduate school and get to do things like build furniture and do silversmithing and make jewelry and all of it on a very professional level. It was, besides everything else, as a shop geek, it was incredible fun. But I got pretty good, and I was able to teach kids about themselves and that they were competent and that they could trust themselves, in addition to teaching them that they can make cool stuff. And all of that was really exquisitely wonderful. So I still have some wood from that graduate school woodshop class. This is decades ago, in another millennium. Why? Partly because of the energy and the memories that it holds, but partly because those trees don't exist on this planet anymore. Old growth rosewood was cut down to make veneer when Scandinavian furniture was popular, and I have a piece of solid rosewood 14 inches wide. And I keep it because someday I will have the time and I will set up a space for myself where I can work with that again and use that sacred wood and some of the other things which come with memories from things that happened at that time, but which also are very special on this planet because we've cut it all down. I also have the tools from that and from, you know, what were the hobbies and the crafts and other things that I've been able to do. And over the course of the last 20, 30 years, most of my focus has been being a dad. And when I was married and then after the divorce, and my focus was not doing those things that nurtured me and that have always been important, but I didn't throw the stuff away. I kept it. I've had a storage room. I had a corner of the basement. And one of the things that's happening in this new place that I'm living is there's a little space in the unheated back hallway that's about 80 square feet, which is really tiny, where I can build a little woodshop. And I'm going to go and get all the stuff out of the storage room and put it back there and see what happens when all of those things that represent who I was and what I know are in a place where I can use them again and make new things and let that creativity come through me. The same is true of doing artwork. I have lots of art materials. I didn't throw them away. First of all, they're expensive, but secondly, now I have time, new time in my life, and playing guitar. I've got a guitar that I got on my 16th birthday, and it's an exquisite instrument. I was very lucky to get the instrument that I found, and I played it for 30 years, and then didn't. It's sitting in the closet, but each of those objects is a shrine. Each of those objects holds an energy, holds a memory, holds the possibility of the creativity that will happen next. And that's not hoarding. That's sacred. So don't let go of the parts of yourself that you've nurtured and that are special for you. Keep the things that allow you to remember that and also will allow you to do those things again. We live in a culture where everybody buys stuff that not only someone else made, but it's not even made by craftsmen. It's made by somebody making very low wages in a third world country. And I mourn the fact that we've lost, most of us have lost, the knowledge and ability to just make our own stuff. Have an idea or have a problem and all by yourself because you know how and you have the stuff to do it. Fix the problem or make your own thing. It's an exquisitely wonderful thing and I encourage everyone to do it. So take a look at your life and see which stuff, yeah, it's really hoarding. Why do I keep this? And which stuff is holding the energy for something that's very important in your life and is really an altar to a sacred part of who you are. So that's tonight's metaphysical musing. And now we get to hang out with Robbie Holtz. How are you tonight?
Great. Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Thanks for being here. We had a wonderful time when the first book came out, Secrets of Aboriginal Healing. And now you have your new book, Aboriginal Secrets of Awakening. And this one is really about your journey. The first one was about your husband Gary's journey.
Right. I get a voice now. How about that?
How about that?
Not bad.
And again, it's the right time.
Yeah, and it also does describe Gary's journey as well. I mean, the first book, Secrets of Aboriginal Healing, talked about his journey into the outback to be healed by the Aboriginals, which was a pretty remarkable thing. And then it stops with him coming back from the outback. And so the second book, Aboriginal mm-hmm. Secrets of Awakening, picks up with him coming back from the outback, which to me is when it got really fascinating. And he discovered that he was a very gifted healer. But it also weaves my stories in and out, how I almost died twice and found that, went from kind of a graceless state, as someone recently commented, to finding that grace and that peace within. And that's a beautiful thing to be able to share with people.
Yes. And you also had your own adventure, your own walkabout in Australia.
I did. That was pretty extraordinary as well. So that that was an honor. And as you know, walkabouts, and there's many forms of walkabouts, but they mm-hmm. are going to ramp up your life and consciousness and take you into a higher consciousness in your life, an awakening on some levels. So it's always interesting to see what happens on the other side of that walkabout.
Right. When you try and come back to who you were and where you were, and you go, wait a minute, nothing's the same.
I came back from that outback to a home that had been flooded for a month and didn't know it, and there was mold had climbed up the walls.
Oh, dear.
And it was pretty much the sign, I mean, I don't know how much more of a sign I needed that it was time to leave that home. That part of my life was over. Yeah. I had lived there with Gary, and he had passed the year before, and I had been really resistant to leaving the home because our memories were there. You know, you talk about these sacred objects and these things hold memories, and so I really didn't want to give up that home because all our memories were there. But the signs were so clearly there when I came back from the outback. It's time to move away from this and create new adventures to move on with my life. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
Well, what I always ask the guests on the show to do is kind of give us the story of the adventure. And some folks will, you know, look in the archive and listen to Gary's story too. But why don't you give us a quick overview of what happened with Gary, because that's how you got connected to the whole world of Australian Aboriginal healing. And then tell us, you know, how did your life unfold that you wound up doing what you did and being who you are now?
Okay. Well, Gary's, you know, he was a physicist. He was a very highly respected globe-trotting physicist and inventor, and pretty much immersed in black and white science. It doesn't exist if you can't prove it. But he had developed multiple sclerosis and was in a wheelchair and was actually, at this point, a quadriplegic, which meant he had no feeling from the neck down. And he had been in that state for at least 7 years. Wow. And you can't be in that kind of a shape where your organs aren't getting, you know, the blood flow and oxygen and the movement that they need. And the doctors told him that he had about 2 years left to live. He actually had about 6 months. And so he couldn't, Western medicine didn't have any answers, and he was determined to find a way to survive because he had two children. And he met a woman in a jazz bar that he had gone to kind of soothe his soul, and she was a naturopathic physician from Australia. And she told him that the remote outback Aborigines had remarkable healing abilities, and she thought they could help him. So even though he had this scientific mind, he just felt something inside him telling him to call the number that she had given him. this was a remote tribe that had not had any connection to civilization, but one of the tribesmen had an apartment in Brisbane because he had grown children who lived in Brisbane, so he traversed both worlds. Mm-hmm. So Gary called that number, and the Aboriginal said, well, what took you so long? We've been waiting for 4 months, even though Gary had just learned about them the night before. They're so tuned in, don't you love that?
That's disconcerting even when you know that stuff goes on, but when you've never heard it before.
Well, they have really learned how to, plug into this grid, this one consciousness, mm-hmm. and unplug from the mind. That's a really important thing to do. So they knew he was coming, and they also were told by the big guy, which is a genderless term for God, goddess, divine mm-hmm. source, whatever that means to you, that they were to give their healing secrets to this man. And now these are ancient, at least 60,000-year-old healing secrets that have been passed down verbally, and that they were to give it to this man, Gary, because he would take it out into the world. And even though they were initially resistant, they have eventually understood that we desperately needed this information. We really don't understand how healing works. So they were happy to give their healing secrets to him. So Gary went into the outback in a wheelchair as a quadriplegic by himself and spent about 10 days time with his tribe and came out 10 days later with feeling in his body, which he hadn't had in 7 years, increased mobility to the point where he could clumsily walk on that airplane aisle, supporting himself with the seats, and mm-hmm. really, more than anything, transformed in mind. It was very dramatic change for him. He understood how the MS had been created. He understood what he needed to do to rectify it, and he was so taken by their healing approach that he started writing that book on the plane ride back and came back and got a doctor degree in immunology so he could practice what they had taught him, which Western science might call that psychoneuroimmunology, how the mind can affect the immune system. So that's really, what the first book is about. And that's why I think it gets fascinating when he comes back from the outback and discovers he's a very gifted healer and has a lot of abilities that the Aborigines have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that was back in 94. And I was on my own walkabout here in the States. I was a career-driven mother, wife, and had managed to, when I delivered my son, it was a rough delivery, and I had been given a blood transfusion that was tainted with hepatitis C. And back then, they didn't even have a name for it. They just called it non-A, non-B. And if they don't have a name, they certainly don't have any kind of cure. So the hepatitis almost killed me. And then the doctors put me on an experimental treatment that almost killed me. And at this point, this is the second time I had survived really slim odds. But I had been left to the point where Western medicine didn't have anything else they could offer me. I couldn't finish a sentence. I didn't know what I was talking about because of the brain damage. Yeah. And I had severely damaged my body from these two crashes that I couldn't get out of bed. I couldn't walk to the mailbox. I mean, this was like 6 or 9 months in bed and really a pretty dark time. But I was motivated, David, to survive because, like you, I have a child. And I had this little boy that I knew was too young to remember his mother and too young to be really effectively raised by me. You know how you want to pass on your wisdom mm-hmm. to them. And so I was determined to find answers, and I found out that there's all kinds of answers out there. And I have since healed myself of the fibromyalgia. Researchers have tested me for at least 8 years. I don't have it. I am cured of what they considered incurable at the time. And I also cured the fibromyalgia. And it put me on this path of just passionately wanting to let people know they have the ability to heal. They're very powerful healers. They just don't know it. We've given a lot of our power away to what other people believe, what our culture is telling us. And so that's my passion now, is to help people recognize most of us are not supposed to be sick. I needed to go through that for my soul's journey, but most of us don't need to be going through so much of this. Our bodies are just crumbling under the emotional weight of what it's being asked to help, to take care of.
It's, yes, I totally agree. Now, you had your own experience going to be with the Aborigines as well.
I did. Now, I met Gary in 2001, and he taught me what the Aborigines had taught him. And I realized, now when I met him, I had already healed myself, and I realized that what I had done to heal myself is exactly what the Aborigines prescribed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, don't you love how that all resonates? So we worked together as this healing team, and then at one, and we were, you know, people don't go to an alternative healer unless they've exhausted all other resources. So we would find people coming to us that had AIDS or stage 4 cancers, and we decided we were spending so much time helping people who were so really sick, chronically ill. Let's go to the other end of that and start teaching people how to heal themselves. Let's teach them how disease is created, and that's another reason that we're on the path that we are. So Gary told me a year before he was going to die that he was being asked to, and I love that I can talk about this in your show, David, he was asked to put his affairs in order, that he would be leaving in a year because he was needed more on the other side. His body was finished in this lifetime, and we were pretty upset about it, but we eventually came to peace with that, and he did pass a year later. I didn't expect, David, that he would keep showing up every morning. I could see his energy. You know, he was always a very punctual man, and so he always showed up at 8:00 in the morning, not 8:01, you know, except one time when he was off an hour when we changed the clocks in the springtime. But
part of the reason I'm laughing, besides the obvious humor of it, is that there's no time on the other side. So how in the world do they even do that?
I know. And I got I just enjoyed so much how I was always late and he was always so punctual. And mm-hmm. I think that's another reason he decided to show up exactly at 8:00. And that he did that one year when he was, that one day when he was off, when we changed our clocks, I just got the biggest kick out of that. It's like, finally, I'm on time and you are not. Probably the only time that ever happened in our, yeah. So a year after he passed, I was given this invitation to go to the Outback and perform ceremonies with the Aboriginal women. The Aboriginal people, the remote ones, are opening their world up more. They're opening up their wisdom. One of the reasons is they're leaving the planet deliberately, and another is it's time for us. You know, it's time to pass the baton and help us wake up. And so the women wanted to open this up. The men were very resistant, but the women won out. Isn't that the way that usually goes? And so the women held these ceremonies and invited, I think, about 20 women from around the world. And I went with a friend of mine from the States. And we went into the Outback and performed these amazing ceremonies with these women. And the men were actually outside the area. We couldn't see them. But right. What we were doing was so powerful that we needed the men to be holding us, grounding us, protecting us.
Yeah. Yeah, that goes on.
The men are very, very good doing. Yeah,
we're going to go to a break in a couple of minutes. I want to make sure that we come right back to the same place in the story. But tell everybody how they can find you on the web and give them the details about the book and how to find that.
You bet. If they go to holzwellness.com, H-O-L-Z as in zebra, W-E-L-L-N-E-S-S.com. Holzwellness.com. There is a lot of information that we have put up to help people learn how to heal. Under the blog section, there's a lot of information. We've tried to make it easy and affordable for people to learn how to. We have an online course we've kept really low. I have consultations that I do. I tell people, give me 1 hour. I will change your life and help you understand your emotional core. And there's an abundance meditation for free. We've made a lot of information up there to help people. So holzwellness.com.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Well, we have to go to the break. We will be back shortly, unless, of course, we get taller. My guest tonight is Robbie Holz. the author of Aboriginal Secrets of Awakening, and we will be doing more with her in just a couple of minutes. This is the Farkas Files on Empower Radio. Don't go nowhere.
This week's episode, Danger at the Old Well.
Last one to the old well's a rotten egg. Ha-ha, I win. Whoa! Ah! Sassy! Johnny fell down the well.
I'm wet.
What, Sassy? You know where Mr. Gunderson keeps his rope? Go get it, girl. What? You'd rather use this time to set people straight about shelter pet adoption?
I'm cold.
People shouldn't be afraid to adopt from a shelter? Because shelter pets are screened for sound health and temperament?
I'm wet and cold!
Sassy, what about Johnny? What? Let Johnny sit in the well until he learns to be more self-reliant? Sassy!
What'd he say?
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the shelterpetproject.org. Remember, adopt!
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called InventNow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on, and lost cats stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the lost cat magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See? That's proof. You should go to the InventNow.org website too. But just remember one thing. Don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at InventNow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Come to the forest. It's a place not so far away. A place where you don't have to mow the lawn or babysit.
I saw lizards and squirrels and bugs.
Ladybugs, caterpillars. It's really cool, actually.
A place where you don't have to make time for free time.
Lots and lots of kinds of species here.
Out here, you may even meet the mysterious creature known as the other you. The enchanted you.
It's magic what flowers do.
The adventurous you.
My favorite tree, yes, is that one.
The free-to-be-me you. Ask your parents to take you to this not-so-far-away place. Come to the forest, where the other you lives. But first, stop by discovertheforest.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back with Robbie Holds, the author of Aboriginal Secrets of Awakening, and we were talking about your adventure in the Outback.
Yeah, I didn't get to the good part. Good thing all the listeners were staying in with us.
What's that?
I said it's great that the listeners were staying with us through, and I have to say, you have some of the most fun commercials I've ever heard.
Yeah, they're pretty funny, and we hear them over and over.
I hope they haven't lost their charm on you. They're pretty good. Yeah.
Well, the secret is I have a chat window open to the studio, and I'm doing, I'm anticipating the words in the commercials. I'm typing little things back to them.
Sure, you're multitasking. Yeah, you got a lot going on.
So tell us more. That the women were doing the ceremony, the men were holding the space and protecting the ceremony.
Yes. You know, and I think what is so profound about the Outback Aborigines, as a lot of indigenous cultures, is they are so connected to the planet. They are so connected to the earth. And they'll tell you that once we started speaking out loud, we really lost that connection. We couldn't hear the trees talking to us. You know, it's so interesting. I was with a lot of indigenous cultures at a gathering in Montana last summer, and they were all saying the same things. They came from all over the world. But like the Aborigines, they can hear the plants communicating to us. They can hear the mountains talking to each other. And the Aborigines have always maintained that connection, and they think it's very primitive and chaotic to be speaking out loud, which is what we're doing, but that's when we started losing that connection. So when we were with these women, these Aboriginal women and their children, they had children there too, when things are out of alignment, they don't pray to the gods, so to speak. They simply know things are out of alignment, and they put things back in alignment, including your body. And so we were creating, unbeknownst to us, the white women, very, very powerful thunderstorms that kept circling around the camp. And we white women had no idea that's what we were doing, and none of us covered our sleeping bags. And there is nothing like memories like a wet sleeping bag in a freezing desert at night. So, but they were very powerful, and when we went back to the hotel, when we were finished after our time out there for a week, the concierge at the hotel said that they hadn't seen storms like that in at least 5 years. So, way to go. They were working on us, David. I knew they were telepathic. And so I was very much more conscious of my thoughts, knowing that they were tuning in and that they were also, when I would wake up during the middle of the night, I would see like these Aboriginal hieroglyphics, like a painting before my eyes when I woke up at night. And I knew that they were sort of sending transmissions, downloading, whatever they needed to do to raise our vibrations. Because we needed to raise our vibrations up high enough to create what we were creating together and to have the experiences that we had. So very powerful things.
And all sounds very familiar to me. I talk to trees all the time. But
oh, do you?
And they talk back, not only telepathically. One of my mentors was a Cherokee medicine man, and I told him about an experience I said. He said, watch, the tree, the leaves are going to talk to you. The wind is the voice of the trees. So watch carefully and see how that works. And I had some extraordinary experiences with that over the years.
Wow. That's beautiful. I would imagine.
And they're lonely because nobody talks to them anymore. So if you go over and telepathically talk to the trees, the first thing you get is gratitude.
Yes, how beautiful. And I was just going to say, I would imagine that that has changed your relationship with trees.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, and that's why when we've lost that connection, we've lost that connection to the planet, which is why we're in the situation that we are. We have overconsumed. We have continued to take from her without realizing Mother Earth loves us more than we can ever imagine, is constantly giving despite all the abuse that we give to her. So, yeah, I heard one indigenous culture. There was a beautiful man who said he sees the river as his brother and treats it as his brother. And I thought, wow, what a beautiful way to look at that river. You would have a different response to it. You certainly wouldn't want to harm it in any way.
Right. Do you know Dr. Emoto, who did all the fascinating work with the crystalline structure of water?
Yes.
And how it's affected by different emotions and different words. He used to organize ceremonies all over the world for people to go down to the ocean and just talk to the water and bless the water and thank it.
Oh.
So that the water could be changed by the gratitude and love.
Yeah, that's a beautiful reminder. It is that simple. And we need to be reminded more often to not take this beautiful planet for granted and to do what we can to send gratitude and love. Makes a big difference.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Bless that water. Yes. And that was one of the experiences that I had in the Outback during those ceremonies. The energy kept building over this week that we were together. And at one point, I mean, you know intellectually that you're one. We know this intellectually, but to be able to feel it is another matter. And during those ceremonies, at one point, I could feel that we were all one. I could see, it was almost like everything blended into each other. And and it was a very, I don't know if you've ever had that experience, David, or not, but it was very profound.
I've had it in sweat lodges, and I've also had it with one other person, or you know, two or three people. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's life altering. The other thing that happened during the ceremonies, it was that I could feel tremendous love from Mother Earth. I could feel that love. I knew that she loved us, but again, there's a difference between intellectualizing and actualizing. And it was a very profound moment again. And the Aborigines already have that. They already know that. They feel it every day. But it was a really beautiful reminder of how much she loves us. And to feel that love was another beautiful thing that I've taken away from that Outback experience that will never leave me. And I would imagine, again, you've also had that experience with your sweat lodges or other things.
Yeah. Yeah, I've had it. And one of the reasons that I live where I live, and, you know, I was just looking for an apartment. Little did I realize that I found a very sacred spot between two rivers with two sacred trees. You know, it's the perfect place.
Yeah.
And I'm constantly just going outside and looking at the sky and going, wow, thanks.
Yeah.
This is amazing.
Yeah. That gratitude is no small thing. That's a beautiful energy to be not just sending out to the planet, to the trees, to the water, but also sending through your body. Gratitude is one of the most healing emotions, one of the highest healing emotions that you can have to heal your body. And it's so simple, and we just don't know that, but it does make a huge difference.
Right. Well, we live in a culture that focuses on whining about what you don't have.
But I think we're waking up. We are waking up.
Yeah. Well, and there there are subcultures where that's a competitive blood sport. Growing up in a second generation Jewish household in New York, complaining is called kvetching. And you have to win.
Yes.
Oh, you think that's bad? Let me tell you what happened.
It's just very competitive, isn't it?
Oh, my God. And, of course, you're creating what you put the emotion into, so the only thing you get to be is right. See, I told you that was going to happen.
Exactly. More of the same.
Right.
But that's why I say that I think people are – it's a quiet movement – but it's happening globally around the planet where people are waking up from what our minds have been doing to us, how we've been so imprisoned. We have so much pain emotionally and physically from what our minds have created. And our minds are just kind of running rampant on the loose, always in the past or in the future or all kinds of baloney that it's feeding us that we're buying into. And we're waking up to that and moving beyond that. And that's into these higher vibrational states, and that makes a huge difference. When you start moving into these higher vibrational states, you no longer are, you know, you get rid of the over-consuming. Greed just doesn't work there. Even competition and judging doesn't work there.
Right.
You're just more of a in love and wanting really to be of service, not fixing or changing things that don't want to be fixed. It's just about how can I be of service? And love and acceptance, that's a big one. not having to have an aversion or attachment, but simply allowing things to be what they are rather than that mind dictating. That's a different world, and that's what I see happening around the planet.
Well, it's the balance to the craziness that's happening around the planet. And the violence and craziness gets all the focus, except for the people like us who are doing things and are around people who are creating the balance. But, you know, there's a Chinese curse that says, may you live in interesting times.
we did, didn't we? Wow.
And this is the transition from the 1,000 years or more of darkness to a time of beauty that we don't even understand yet. And there's always a period of chaos where the old ways don't want to let go and the new ways are not in place. And where, you know, the bigger the chaos is, the bigger the transition's going to be. So it's going to be an interesting transition.
And the greater the opportunities. You know, that's another thing is, you know, people get really discouraged when they see what's going on out there. And of course, the foxes are in the hen house feeding us the news quite often, which is why we need shows like yours that are giving us what's truth and we can resonate to it. But it's about paying attention to, I love that I'm on a show that I can talk about this. You know, we waited in line to get here. We really wanted to be here to help this planet transition into greater levels of awakening. So I tell people, pay attention to, you know, what kind of energies are you putting out there? Because if the news is frustrating you and you're throwing out a lot of anger and you know, resentment or guilt or frustration, well, then turn it off and pay attention to what kind of energy are you throwing out there, because it's affecting not just you and your body, but everyone around you and the planet. And recognize you're here for a reason. It's not, the question is not, who am I? The question is, what am I here to do? And some of us are spiritual warriors. Some of us are here to help others awaken. You know, some of us have higher lights and higher love that's operating through us. And I'm sure that you are very well aware of that 100 monkey theory.
Oh, yeah.
And as 100 monkeys on an island started having an awareness, other monkeys on other parts of the world have the same awareness because of that grid, that consciousness that we're all connected to. So I tell people, as you awaken, as you move into these higher vibrational states, it allows the others to do the same. It's that 100 monkey theory, and that's why we're here, and that's why it's so important to pay attention to, what do I feel moved to do? What really grabs my heart? Not a fear-based mind, but what really feels right from my heart, what I'm supposed to be doing, and what kind of love can I add to this? What kind of compassion can I add to this situation? Because, as we said earlier, there's so many opportunities. This planet offers so much contrast. It's tremendous how fast we grow and evolve here because of the contrast. So it all serves a purpose.
And some days I can remember that, and some days...
some days, well, not one, so much.
Yeah. Right. One of the things about the news that... I got clear on a long time ago, but it's still, every time I look at it that way, I shake my head. It's a very, very sophisticated way of getting people to do something. And mostly what they want you to do is either buy something or take a political action. And they do it by invoking one of two emotions or both at the same time. And one of them is fear, and the other one is sexual arousal. And on the news, and on most of TV, but on the news is about fear and the commercials are about sex. Mm-hmm. There's always images of beautiful people being sexy. So at that point, you are so sucked in by the fact that those emotions have been raised that they can pretty much tell you anything.
You'll go out and buy the pizza even. Yes, exactly.
Right. So my thing is, if somebody is telling you, be afraid, be very afraid, and there isn't actually a gun or a saber-toothed tiger in your physical vicinity, you can assume that they're trying to pick your pocket and make you do something.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's why I say, David, that people are waking up to that. Mm-hmm. Thank God there is the social media and there is information that's not coming from the foxes in the hen house. And we are being offered the truth. And you know the truth. It's remembering again. It resonates mm-hmm. with you. And so we have those opportunities. And that's, again, that 100 monkey theory comes into play. As you start to awaken to this and realize what's going on, it helps and create the pathway for others to do the same.
Absolutely. Just for people who have never heard of the 100th monkey, and you can just look it up, obviously. But this was a real experiment on isolated islands in the Pacific with a species of monkey that they had been studying for a long time. And there was a feeding behavior that was unique that showed up. One mom washed the sweet potatoes that was the staple of their diet before she ate them and gave them to her children. And her kids learned it, but she also taught it to the other women, to the other female monkeys. The men were busy doing what men do and not paying attention. And at a certain point, they reached a critical mass on that island, which they called the 100th monkey. And whatever that was, on another island separated by long distances in the ocean, that behavior showed up with no connection whatever to the other monkeys. And so the idea is that when whatever the precise number, and some people say it's 10% of population or whatever it is, when we reach an understanding across a large enough percentage of the population, which is not a huge number of people comparatively, that suddenly everybody will be transformed. That consciousness by itself will expand and teach it to everybody else. And that's incredibly encouraging, obviously.
It is. And I think there's enough people on the planet that those numbers are there. Things are happening. It's just that it doesn't make the news. You don't know that. And it just occurred to me now, David, I've been aware of that theory, and I love the way you explain that. It was a female monkey an island that they were doing, I think, nuclear experiments. And so she was washing the food of this nuclear waste. And so it may seem like
I didn't know that piece. Interesting.
Yeah, and isn't that interesting? Because isn't that kind of a metaphor for what's happening on the planet now? It may seem right. hopeless, and that the whole island is overtaken by this nuclear waste, and yet there was a way out, and yet there was a way to convey that to others across the globe.
Right.
It's a bigger picture than we realize. That's why we want to pay attention to, again, what kind of energy am I adding to the mix?
Right. Right. And the process of your own emotional healing, which allows you to let go of the negative emotions so you're not spewing them all over the place, then becomes a planetary healing because you're now able to hold a different energy and put a different energy out.
Exactly.
So doing the inner work is a key part of changing the planet.
Exactly. And you don't fight fear with fear. That's just the mind again. It really boils down to, it sounds like such a cliche, but it's so true. Love is really the answer. Mm-hmm. When you move from the heart, when you move from that that soul's voice, it's a different approach. And that's where we're heading, and that's what I think will save us. We are the ones that are here to save us.
And as I keep trying to find the source to this quote, but we are the ones we've been waiting for.
Yes, exactly.
There's nobody else that's going to show up. We're already here. We just have to take our place and do what we came to do.
Exactly. And recognize the time is now. It's you're here for a reason. Wake up to it and listen to that voice inside that tells you what you're here to do. And when you're on the path of what you're here to do, you love it. It's a passion, and it's so fulfilling, and you're designed for it. And everybody here is uniquely designed, and it's so amazing once you get in that flow. It's incredibly fulfilling.
It's certainly very different from people who are just caught up in work and social life.
Yeah, exactly. It's a different world. Yeah.
Totally. Totally different world.
Yeah.
Robbie, tell people a little bit about the work that you offer, the sessions that you offer.
Well, you know, I've always said, give me 1 hour and I will transform your life. I just need 1 hour. I do consultations with people. And the Aborigines taught us it's really important to find out what the emotional core is to your illness, or it's like picking the top of a dandelion. It's going to come right back again. So I work with a beautiful healing team of the highest love and light, and they help me understand what is your emotional core. And sometimes it's subconscious, sometimes it's conscious, but help this person understand what they've been doing to create it and how to uncreate it, and gain assistance from this healing team to help that all help, you know, happen faster and naturally, and sustain the healing. That's important. Because my passion is, again, to help people wake up to how to heal themselves, and then they can do what they're here to do. A lot of people are getting stuck with a lot of the stuff that their minds are throwing at them, that they're believing, and their bodies are suffering for it. So my passion is to really help people figure out how to heal. It's a lot more simpler than they think. The mind is a very powerful tool. And I love doing it, and I've deliberately kept those rates really low so that it's accessible to anybody. And pass
Fantastic.
It on. Pass it on.
Fantastic. And all that information is on your website?
You betcha. HolzWellness.com. H-O-L-Z. You've
H-O-L-Z
been pronouncing it correctly.
Wellness.
It is pronounced com. With that T in there, but it confuses people. It's H-O-L-Z. That's the German thing. I have nothing to say for that.
And I try not to pronounce your name with a T on the end.
Well, I don't know if I should give it up someday or not, but it's there. Yeah.
Well, as always, this is a pleasure. We really should, you know, get together and chat.
We should. I know. We could talk for hours. It always goes by so fast with you, David. It's always so much of a treat for me.
It certainly is. And, of course, we're running out of time, which is what's the frustration with the show. My guest tonight has been Robbie Holds.
Really? That's good.
That good?
Yeah, great.
Her newest book is Aboriginal Secrets of Awakening, and obviously what she's sharing is the experiences that she and her husband had learning from Aboriginal healers in the Australian outback. Robbie, thanks so much for being on the show. This is
so
much fun.
Thank you so much, David. It's always my pleasure.
And mine. So maybe we'll figure out something else to talk about before you have to write another book.
There is another one coming. I can feel it.
Okay. Do it quickly so we can have you on the show again.
All right.
Again, my guest has been Robbie Holds. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, David. Loved it.
And if you got at all curious about this strange guy David, what does he do? You can go to househealing.com, and cleverly hiding in plain view on the contact tab is every conceivable technology I could come up with for getting in touch with me, including a scheduling link. I do a 20-minute free assessment of whatever's going on with a person, place, situation, business, and we can see how my work might be helpful to you. If you want more information about the show, again, hiding in plain view at thefarkasfiles.com is the archive of the show. We've been doing it now for 4.5 years, so there are hundreds of interviews there. The show is also, you can listen at empowerradio.com. We're also on iHeartRadio and iTunes podcasts and two other streaming media outlets that I'm not remembering at the moment. And if you enjoy the show and you enjoy the other shows on Empower Radio, and Empower Radio is 24/7 positive messages. You can tune in at any point and listen to folks who are not the mainstream Fox and the Hen House, who are talking about how you can change your life and what's good in the world. If that's important to you, if that's something that enriches your life, please help us out at this point. We're doing an Indiegogo fundraising, crowdsourcing campaign to upgrade all the equipment and really move to some things that we've wanted to do for a while, but the money hasn't been there. So kind of like public radio, if you enjoy what we do and it makes a difference in your life, go to to empowerradio.com, find the link to the Indiegogo campaign, give whatever you can. Every little bit helps, and we appreciate anything that you can give to us to keep things going. So this is always so exciting to me because there are people all over the world who plug in at their own schedule, at their own time, and I think it's 90 different countries around the planet, who listen to my show. How incredible is that? So use our show any way that it works for you and listen to the rest of the shows on Empower Radio. And until next week, this is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. Have a fantastic week.